In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. We'll get back to football here coming up in a bit. We're going to hand things off to Josh Vernier at 5 o'clock as the Royals play Game 2 of their series against the New York Yankees. Let's head to Manhattan right now to be joined by Joel Goldberg. He is the Royals' pre- and post-game host on Bally Sports. Joel, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. Always good to be in New York. All the excitement. It's cool to be here. It's always, it's New York, so it's always the bright lights. But to have two teams that are almost both certainties to get into the playoffs, even a potential playoff preview, is pretty cool because we haven't seen a lot of that between Royals and Yankees in recent years.
What is your favorite city to travel to? What is your least favorite city to go to?
Oh, I get this one in the stadium question a lot. The favorite city, I mean, there's a few of them. I won't go through them all, obviously, but I love Boston, in part because I love going to Fenway, just the history, and then it's a really cool city. I love New York. I mean, this might be surprising, but two old guys like me and Ryan Lefebvre, we went out this morning and just walked for 5 miles, walked over towards Central Park, around there, and back down around. So that was cool. I love Toronto. I think, the bigger cities are fun. I like Seattle, too. It's a little bit different than the world we're used to living in. I know the political answer is I don't have a least favorite. And part of me says, I do think there's good in every city because we spend so much time there. You get to get your favorite breakfast place. You start to meet people. But I think, we've gone to places like, say, Cleveland so many times that I know exactly where I want to go. But at a certain point, you can only go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame so many times. You can only do this so many times. And so that's why I like the bigger cities. There's just more to do, and you're never going to run out of things to do during your mornings and your free time.
I have to ask you one more food question before we get to the baseball. Who has better pizza, Chicago or New York?
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a great question because I grew up in almost both places. I grew up outside of Philadelphia, and then we moved to Chicago when I was 13. I'll always say East Coast pizza is better, but I also feel like if I want, like, Chicago deep dish, I remember Jon Stewart did something on this on The Daily Show at a certain point. It's not pizza. I mean, it's a version of pizza, but I think it's almost like a distant cousin. So I grew up with that old school, folded over, New York style, East Coast style pizza. That's usually my favorite.
Right now, we're talking to Joel Goldberg, who is the Royals' pre- and post-game host on Bally Sports. Joel, before we talk about last night and just sort of looking ahead with the Royals, I mean, this team won 56 games last year. You were there every single day interviewing around the team. Can you even believe the turnaround that they have? That right now Fangraphs has them as an over 90% chance of making the postseason. They have taken the bet off the board on FanDuel. It is that much of a foregone conclusion. Like, you and I are going to be talking about, you're going to be attending a Royals playoff game here in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. I think after the fact, you know, we always say hindsight's 20/20. After the fact, you can see how it happened. We saw it happening at the time. It was really hard to envision. I mean, the answer that I gave CDOT back during spring training was some version of this. I guess I'm paraphrasing myself now. It was, well, of course, they all believe they can win because I've yet to see a team, even the White Sox this year, said, well, if everything goes right, we could do it. I mean, every team thinks during spring training that if everything lines up right, you catch a couple lucky breaks. But, I mean, if we go back to that time, everybody was trying to figure out, like, who's the one team from this division that makes it because it's a terrible division. And it's certainly looking like there are going to be three teams that make it. What I felt at the time and what I said at the time was if they could get to 500, that's a really good year. And I think they can do it with all the moves they made. But let's at least take a deep breath here because that would be 25 more wins than last year. And now if they end up at 500, it would be just a terrible ending and a total collapse. And I don't see that happening. So I think the one thing I do remember is that there was a lot of talk about, hey, there have been some teams in the last couple of years that have turned things around, the Baltimore Orioles, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and anything is possible. There was an incredible buzz going into the year. Don't you think all of us would have taken a, 77, 80, 82 win season after last year and thought this is great progress?
No, absolutely. Everybody would have taken that. I mean, I was thinking that this was probably between a 75 and 77 win team. I am curious to get your thought process on this. When did you, I guess, start to believe that this was real? Yeah. Because you mentioned the hype. And you and I have been around sports enough to know that the preseason hype that you have in February or March doesn't necessarily translate to June or July. Like, there became a point for you when you were like, hey, they can do this. I think this could be a playoff team. Do you remember when that was?
Yeah, I do. And I think actually it was probably in the latter part of June, and I'll explain why. And it is like the fact that I can remember this, I don't remember what I ate for breakfast yesterday, but or even the final score. Well, I do remember the final score of the game, but I had to think about it for a second. But here was my thought process, and I thought they'd be somewhere around 77 to 82 wins, and so we were all off great, glad that we underestimated that. But what I thought was April, you know, end of March into April, same thought I have every single year. Just start off strong. You don't have to go and start off like gangbusters, but don't get buried in April. How many years have we seen this Royals team? They're not the only one in baseball, but how many years have we seen the season basically looking like it's over in April? And you could have a bad April and still win, but you're playing catch-up the whole way, and so you don't have any equity there. They played well in April. So then I thought, okay, in May, let's just make sure this isn't a fluke. Before we start believing that this is a playoff-contending team, let's see if they could do it again in May. They did. I remember my thought at the end of May, and I said some version of this on the air late May, early June. I said at some point, this team is going to face some adversity, and they're going to face some losing. How do they respond to that? And June was the first month that they didn't play great. They had some losing streaks in there. And I just remember that when the month was over, they were only maybe two, maybe three games under 500. That was the moment that I thought, this is the first month they didn't play all that well. There might be something here beyond just a decent team. And then they went out and they played well in July, and at that point I realized by July, by the All-Star break, that this team, while not a guarantee to play in the playoffs, this team has what it takes. And I felt like we were able to identify a bit of what that was, and it's really simple, kind of boring. It starts with starting pitching. And I felt like good teams avoid long losing streaks, and this team, which was oftentimes losing two of three games. They haven't been very good in rubber games, but what they were doing was they'd lose two of three and then they'd go sweep a team. They'd lose three of five and then they'd go sweep a team. And so they're quickly just mounting the wins and going one over, two over, three over, five over 500. The run differential was mounting. And it was just sort of a slow and steady ascent and a consistent ascent. And the last piece that I would say, CDOT, is that when right before that losing streak, maybe a week or two before the seven-game losing streak that they just got over, I said something on the air about, look, they are on track for the playoffs now, but buckle up. I think it was right around the end of August. I said something silly like on the air, like, if you like roller coaster rides, If you like going to Worlds of Fun, which I don't, then buckle up and enjoy this ride, because they will be tested at some point. They will have a losing streak at some point. I didn't realize it was going to be like a week later that they lost seven in a row. But this was further confirmation for me that they just lost seven in a row. They came back and chased that with four wins in a row. And they are right smack dab in the same playoff spot with as good of a winning percent or a playoff percentage chance, as you just mentioned, from Fangraphs as when that seven-game losing streak started. So it's been building all year long, but I feel like I started getting a hint of it in early June and then certainly into July.
Right now we're talking to Joel Goldberg, who does the pre- and post-game for the Royals for Bally Sports. We love basketball analogies on this show. We love a good cross-sport comparison. What it felt like with the Royals to me is in a game, in a basketball game, when you go up 11, then the other team goes on a run, and now you're up 5, and you call timeout. How you respond after that timeout will determine if you win the game. Well, after that timeout, the Royals hit a big three in that series sweep against the Minnesota Twins, and I think it allowed everybody to exhale a little bit because you were looking at the standings. Minnesota's right there. The Tigers are right there. You start talking yourself into Seattle or Boston. I feel like that series win against Minnesota, how they won it, dominating that series, it has given everybody the nice breath of fresh air that they needed.
Totally agree with you, and I thought that that was one of the most important series on the year for two reasons. One, the obvious, they were just coming off of that seven-game losing streak. So I do think winning that finale against Cleveland to stop the losing streak and not get swept by the first-place team, we'll see if they catch Cleveland or not. I still think they can. But I think that winning that game against Cleveland and not going into the Minnesota series on an eight-game losing streak was extremely important. You sit on an off day, eight in a row, and now you got to face a Minnesota team that you were, I think, 3-7 against on the year. And for whatever reason, Minnesota had the Royals' number this year. So I think the second piece to that, and echoing what you just said, is that this is a team that has had their number. No team had beat the Royals more than the Twins this year. They just hadn't played good baseball against them. It started right from the beginning, you know, the first series of the year where they were able to avoid a sweep on the final Sunday of that opening series. To be able to sweep the Twins, to be able to give up only two runs in the series, to be able to do it the way they did and really kick a Minnesota team that's down right now, a Minnesota team right now that by the numbers still should make the playoffs, but now suddenly they're the ones that are eyeballing Boston and Detroit in the rearview mirror. And the Royals aren't really eyeballing anybody in the rearview mirror. They're looking ahead, having survived that seven-game losing streak. And yes, nothing is guaranteed, but there's a reason why that percentage is just a little bit over 90%. They're in the driver's seat right now. And so I think that Minnesota series was one of the biggest of the year. I think that they were able to shed a little bit of that weight, the monkey on their back that was Minnesota, and show that they could certainly play with them and that, you know, when you have great pitching, anything's possible.
Joel, the question now with the Royals is, are they going to be a wild card team or are they going to represent the American League Central as the division champions? Are you still looking at the division as a realistic possibility for this team with, you know, less than 3 weeks to go?
Yeah, I don't see why not. And, you know, it feels like Cleveland never loses, but, you know, they had a big losing streak in there in August. And I just keep thinking that their rotation, which is always so consistent every year, has been in shambles all year. Their bullpen has been their best element. Their bullpen has been ridiculously overused this year. And that's not even a critique of them. That's just what they've had to do. And the Royals have been the opposite. A lot of innings on their rotation. And we've seen it. Cleveland's bullpen did not look as good in the last two series against the Royals. So we'll see. I mean, you know, it's unfortunate that they're playing the White Sox these next couple of days. Like, you know, if you're in a race, you'd love to have the White Sox once or twice before things are up. But, you know, the Royals took care of that business. They went 12-1 against them. The shocking part to me on Cleveland is that they're 6-5 against the White Sox this year. Like, how did the White Sox win five games against them? So maybe Chicago could do the Royals a favor and win one or two. They've got the tiebreaker. They won the season series against Cleveland, which is amazing because usually Cleveland has their number traditionally in the past. So if they can get to a position where they could tie this thing, then they would win the division. And I think that that would be incredibly favorable, because you're either going to get a bye or you're going to get a home series. You know, for those that haven't paid too much attention to it, you know, the playoff, the wild card format has changed. I think for the better, we love the way things went in 2014. If we had lost that game, I think we would have been lamenting the fact that it was only one game. So we benefited from that. And now you got to win two of three, but it's all in one location to eliminate the travel and having those top teams sit for too long. So it would certainly be beneficial to win the division. If you don't win the division, then you're looking at, you know, potentially a wild card matchup against Baltimore or New York, and you got to go there. I think I'd rather take my chances against Baltimore. There's something about coming to Yankee Stadium. I mean, the Royals have won one series here since 2014, so if they're going to break that slide, they're going to have to do it with wins tonight and tomorrow. It's just a tough place to play.
Joel, I got two final questions for you. The first question is, I'm going to give you the power to vote for MVP. I want you to make the case for Bobby Witt Jr. over Aaron Judge.
Well, we know what's going to end up happening, and this isn't so much what I usually would say is, oh, big market favoritism, it's the Yankees, it's New York. I mean, that's all part of it, sure. But the numbers that he is putting up are historical. When you got a guy in Judge that's leading in homers, RBIs, OPS, OPS plus, WAR, on and on and on. But he and Bobby Witt Jr., we ran a graphic last night, have a WAR of, at least before last night, like 9.6 each of them. And we were rattling off the players since 2000 that have had a 10-plus WAR, wins above replacement, in a season. Bonds did it four times. A-Rod did it once. Mookie Betts did it once. It's all names like that. Mike Trout did it twice. If Aaron Judge gets to 10, he's going to have done it twice. My point on that is that he and Bobby Witt Jr. are neck and neck there. So my argument on Bobby Witt Jr. would be, I think there's two or three things I would say. One, very few people in the history of the game have had a season like he's had, statistically. That may be as much a product of just his very unique skill set. We've seen power hitters before. We've seen some version of an Aaron Judge before. We very rarely have seen this type of version of what we're getting from Bobby Witt. The speed and power combination, the leading the league in hits and batting average. I think all of those categories are important. I just think those power numbers are typically going to trump it more. I think that the arguments, if you're saying they're close, that should put Bobby Witt Jr. ahead. One, he's played in every game. Nobody else has done that. Two, he's done so at the most important position in baseball, at shortstop. I guess you could argue catcher would be as important. So he's doing it at shortstop, which is just remarkable, because all the other names that I mentioned in terms of WAR and all that are not shortstops. They're typically outfielders or that. So, is he going to win it? I don't think he is. Is he worthy of winning it? Yes. If I had a vote, I don't. I'd probably be biased because I've seen every single one of his games this year. I think that there's always seat up and that what is the true definition of most valuable player. And I think if you took Bobby Witt Jr. away from the Royals, they may not be in this race. The Yankees did lose Aaron Judge for a while, and they're still in, you know, contention for that division title. So I think that would be my argument for Bobby. And I think when all is said and done, if he stays healthy through the course of his career, he'll end up with more MVPs than Aaron Judge.
Last thing here, Joel. We have a circle of trust that we stole from Meet the Parents, and we put, you know, players in there, teams inside our circle of trust. Let's say that it is a 5-4 game in the postseason. Let's say we are heading into the seventh inning. How would you handle that? Who is in your circle of trust right now in the bullpen for you to hold a 5-4 lead? Because the names and the arms are kind of scarce on this side.
Maybe, maybe not. So I think we all agree that at this moment, and of course we know how these things can change in a moment, I think we all feel pretty good about Lucas Hursek in the ninth. I don't think that's what you're getting at, right? You're trying to get at the seventh and the eighth, which was actually a discussion that we were having a little bit last night, because we weren't sure if Hursek would be available and never made it to that point, because he had gone the last 2 days in a row. Hunter Harvey doesn't seem to be making progress. That doesn't mean he won't be back. I would have liked to have thought that he would have been the eighth inning guy, so let's rule that out right now. At that point, You know, I think that John Schreiber's in there somewhere. I think that's going to be a little bit based on matchup and, you know, do you need a ground ball, that type of thing, versus a strikeout. I want to give you two names that to me right now are intriguing only because I didn't ever expect them to be in the discussion. And that would be Chris Bubich and Daniel Lynch. And I would love to see over these final few weeks a little bit more high leverage for them. Bubich has been getting some of it. Lynch has been coming in for two or three innings, but both of those guys at times have looked really unhittable. Is it possible that just being aggressive and coming out there for an inning could be what it takes? So I think John Schreiber's in that mix somewhere. And then, you know, all of them have been decent out there. I just don't know exactly who that eighth inning guy is yet. I do think that they have some nice options at this point, but I would like to see a little bit more of Lynch and a little bit more of Bubich, two guys we thought whenever they made it back might be in the rotation at some point. But I think both of those guys could be very useful.
That is our guy, Joel Goldberg, joining us on the show today. He is the Royals pre- and post-game host for Bally Sports. They got another one on the road in Yankee Stadium. Joel, it's always great to catch up with you and talk baseball. Let's do this in a couple of weeks when they make the playoffs.
Sounds good to me. See you, Carrington.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.